We're on.
Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to this discussion session, and a couple of clarifications I want to make. First of all, this is a discussion session, and we defined quite some time ago what we would be doing and how room would be set up, things that would be recorded, not recorded, things that would be live streamed, etc. Our business meetings are live streamed, and some of our other meetings, very few, but some of them are live streamed. This is strictly a discussion session. So it is tape recorded, like all of our other discussion sessions, and we will go from here. I'd also like very much to thank Mrs. Jimenez for bringing this up at our Capitol workshop that we had. I appreciate that very much, that we do a follow-up, and I think that your direction to staff as far as some of the questions you had, what was available and other things, was a nice opportunity for us to move forward with this with a discussion session. So thank you, Ms. Jimenez, very much. That was quite appropriate. That being said, Dr. Adams, if you'd like to proceed.
I will. Thank you. You know, since that discussion, since it was brought up at the Capitol Outlay, staff has been very diligent in looking at a lot of information. So today we want to present information. We want to look at this building. We want to look at other things in the county that the staff has followed up on, and it's pretty comprehensive. I want to say ahead of time, I think they really did a comprehensive job of giving advantages and disadvantages things. So with that, I would just like to turn over to Mr. Morrison, and he will introduce his staff.
Thank you very much, Dr. Adams. Good afternoon, board members. To my immediate right, we have Scott Sanders, Director of Facilities. To his immediate right, Mr. John Ehrman, our Director of Physical Plant. And at the end, we have our Code Compliance Fire Inspector, Mr. Pete Coatman. In the audience today with us, just in case you have questions on a particular option, we also have Mr. Rene Tursilla from Tursilla Courtmanche Architects. Today, as Dr. Adams mentioned, we did get direction from the board to explore various options, see what's out there. We'd like to present our work to you, what we did, run through some finances, and then we'll have some discussion at the end. As mentioned, on the 25th, the board gave us direction to explore some relocation options for the administrative complex. We investigated and assessed various options. We went out to sites, and we visited several sites. We did visual inspections of the some of the buildings that we looked at. We had discussions with Indian River County staff. We talked to the City of Vero Beach airport manager staff. We had discussions with a realtor. We visited the property appraiser and the realtor websites. We went to the foreclosure listing website. We also discussed with Mr. Tursilla certain opinions of cost. And then finally, we went through the capital outlay plan to review to see how we could come up with some financing. So with that said, I'm going to turn over the presentation to Mr. Sanders so he can run you through the options. But before we do that, just to let you know, we have in front of you put all the information that's being presented today in a nice little folder so you can follow along. You should have an assessment report that was emailed to all board members on Friday, which sort of a lot of the information, if not all, comes from the assessment report. We've just summarized it here for you. So, Scott?
Good afternoon, everyone. Just to begin with, we wanted to talk about the facility that we're currently in. This building is probably very familiar to you, maybe more so than you'd like. It was built in 1950, which makes it 63 years old. There's 26,775 square feet currently being utilized, not necessarily efficiently, but that's how much we have available here. The building houses six departments. We have human resources, curriculum instruction, staff development, information technology, business finance, and then a portion of the exceptional student education department. The other portion is housed in different places, mostly Dodgertown. We have seven portables there that they are housing. The current location is not currently utilized for three of the departments. I got an order there, but I just wanted to make sure where we point out that the attendance department is housed somewhere else. The ESC department that we just talked about, a portion of them is at Dodgertown, and the voluntary pre-K is housed somewhere else as well. And those are three departments that would be, we felt like, more efficient if they were closer to the administration complex. The existing building houses four executive offices, including the superintendent, executive assistance office, board members' offices, board administration, and school board executive conference room, which is shared with the attorney as her office. And I'll turn this over to Mr. Ehrman in just a moment, just to make sure everybody remembers. We've done some analysis over the last few months and year, and I'd like for him to talk now about the current condition of the building that we're in.
I think the bottom line here is 63 years ago, nothing lasts forever, and we're past forever. So this morning we got a 1-inch rain. We had 2 roof leaks. One was over the women's bathroom, so it's starting to get past the manageable phase, I guess. The roof from the air, if you ever fly over this building, looks like a quilt. It's patches on patches, and it actually, if you Google Earth it, you can see the patches on the roof. The HVAC system is mostly original equipment, never designed to last as long as it has, and is basically due for an entire replacement. There's no repair to it. It's the best we can do with duct tape and things like that, and that's not really a repair. The sanitary sewer system is underground. Portion is ductile and cast iron. And what's happening to us now is that it's shelling, what's called shelling, where the inside of it, chunks of it fall off and fall into the flow stream. And then the toilet paper hits it and back in clogs it up. We clear it. The chunk just moves down another foot. Toilet paper hits it, it clogs up. So we've cleaned this bathroom. We've had to rot out the sewer system here, I think, 8 times in one day. So basically, we're parking personnel here during events and things. The carpeting is wore down to the jute. All the piles gone. So it's and it's also coming on it here, which is starting to become a safety hazard. The ceiling of the windows. The windows. Approximately half of them were replaced. The other half of them were original equipment, which were designed as emergency exits for gurneys, so that you could sling the window out and shove a gurney out the window. Needless to say, they're not impact rated or very weather tight. The information technology room has undergone years of expansions, and in saying that, the power needs have quadrupled. And we haven't been able to bring enough infrastructure, so now we have expansions on top of expansions on top of expansions. And there's some terminology for that, but basically you lose control of where it's from, where it's going from. There's some environmental compliance issues that have been documented by our environmental assessment team. There's multiple ones in here. None of them are of a imminent threat to anyone, but what that does is complicate renovation, because basically we have to get everyone out of the building at one time and abate the environmental issues. So it just makes the renovation, if you were to go that route, that much more difficult and lengthy. And pest and rodent issues, I think, I've said, everybody knows that they've been here longer than us. We put together a preliminary estimate cost to renovate this building back to some sort of standard, and if we're basically working around the $4.3 million range to bring it up to more habitable conditions.
The $4.3 million, board members, is detailed on page 5 of the assessment report. That should also be in your packet, which details an estimated cost for each line item.
So moving forward, we took a look at the space that we have. We looked at the space that we need, the personnel. Currently, you can see on the chart here, we have done some research. We worked with Mr. Trusilla and put together an acceptable square foot number per person in an administrative setting. This doesn't mean that you have someone sitting in a 15 by 15 office. This 250 square foot per person number comes from the inclusion of the office space along with the hallways, the closets, the bathrooms, everything that's required to accommodate an office setting. This is an acceptable number that we found in different research. Again, educational, administrative settings aren't as abundant to research as, say, a corporate setting. But the best we can determine, 250 square feet is about the going capacity. We currently have 83 employees housed in this building. With the inclusion of the additional departments that we discussed, and then allowing for just a little bit of growth, we come up with 100 people, which gives us a 25,000 square foot need. That's not inclusive of this boardroom. To add the boardroom to that would be approximately 5,000 additional square feet. Discussions with the DOE have indicated that we're at a little bit of a deficit with our staff development space. We don't have as much space as we're allowed or as other districts do have, so we've added some staff development square footage. And then the ESE department, who's currently housed in 7 portables at Dodgertown, which is roughly 6,000 square feet, when we looked at their needs, we feel like an additional 3,000 square feet would service what they're required to as far as their personnel goes and their records and whatnot, which is somewhat expansive. So we came to a total of 39,575 square feet. Again, we have had preliminary discussions with the Department of Education. They've indicated a willingness to approve that. Of course, that's not an approval. That's just it sounds acceptable. Based on the counts that we have and the needs that we show, it's something that they're willing to work with us on.
Can I ask questions now, actually? Board members?
Well, we do have a finite amount of time because we do have another meeting after this. So, do you, it's a pleasure, board. You would obviously like to ask questions as we go along.
Well, my question is about square footage. I see what you've calculated for some people and for the boardroom and staff development in ESE, but, you know, we have the IT room with all the computers, and we have a records room that we have, and it doesn't allow for other additional meeting rooms. So does that all just come off of the per-person square footage? I mean, that's a lot of ancillary space.
It is. The 250 square foot number is inclusive of all of those. I didn't name all of the things that it includes, but in the educational type setting, that's inclusive of conference rooms, board rooms,
IT.
It's an inclusive number of an entire facility for that purpose. So, again, we haven't done a hard design, and that number could change one way or the other as we actually allocate space to our specific needs. But that is inclusive of everything that goes along with an administrative building.
Any questions? Okay. Actually, I do have a question.
Okay.
I know that we did an old needs assessment. That's back before we made so many major cuts in administration and other staff. Did we pull that out? I know it's there somewhere. I think it was 2008.
It's November 20th, 2007.
2007, okay.
We watched a meeting, but we couldn't locate the materials in
time
for this workshop.
Okay, all right. I just wondered how, because I couldn't find mine. I looked for mine in my...
I have them.
You have
them?
Okay.
It's maybe 2,000.
Okay, I was going to say, this
huge.
To me is considerably less than...
I was thinking 50. PPRH.
That's exactly
okay.
What they were...
Okay. So this does reflect reduced staffing.
Yeah. However, please bear in mind, and you may want to, in memory, go back to when Mrs. Pickett was here and she was discussing the change in the capital outlay FTE. At that time, we had sufficient capacity that would allow DOE to approve a larger size facility. Mm-hmm. So the formula today would not allow us to approve or the board to get a 52,000 square foot building.
Would that have been prior to the support?
Would have been
facility.
Prior. It was prior to the support right,
okay.
Facility
somewhere
at the time.
Yes.
So we explored numerous options as we discussed. We're familiar with the building that we're in. So if the decision of the board were to relocate, some of the availabilities are first off, we start with a lease. The City of Vero Beach Airport has a transmission and distribution office building and warehouse facility that if the sale were to go through with FPL and FPL were to take over the utility, the city would no longer have need of that facility, and that facility would then become available to whoever the airport can find to fill the space. So we took a tour. We looked at some plans, some limited sets of plans that they had available, and we took a tour around the facility and the grounds. We found some advantages and disadvantages. We have some of them listed here. Intergovernmental cooperation, which we have a need. We move into a facility that they have a need of leasing, so we participate there. The facility itself ends up being closer to 12, but further from 11 facilities than where we currently are right now. The building appears to be in good condition. We didn't do any thorough testing, but we did take a look at the walls, the roof system. They had a new roof installed in 2005. So the building appears to be in good condition. The availability of the network fiber, which is a high-cost item, they're currently a consortium partner with us, so they have our network run into their facility, so when we moved in, it would already be there for us to tie into. Some of the disadvantages we identified were the availability of the building contingent on the FPL sale. It's been going on for some time. It's been delayed. I'm not aware of a hard fixed date when it will happen, so we're at the mercy of the attorneys to get that one straightened out. The second one is that FPL did express some interest to the city that if they were to buy the utility, they might could use this building. They didn't commit to it, say that they definitely want to, but they're reserving the right to reevaluate and decide at the time. So even if the sale went through, it might not become immediately available. The building itself is not as large as what we've identified in the previous slide. It's 30,000 square feet, so it's about 10,000 shy. It would have to be renovated. It currently isn't configured in a way that we can make use of it. We'd have to construct a boardroom. We'd have to reconfigure the offices. And then the final disadvantage is somewhat large, and that's the Federal Aviation Authority's subordination clause, which is basically if the Navy or the Air Force or anyone decided that they needed that space in case of emergency, whatever that emergency might be, then we have to evacuate and it becomes used by them. Further discussions with the airport. They also have vacant land available. And over the years, they lease that land out. They sign on to long-term leases and allow people to build the suit. So they offered some vacant land to us. They have roughly 5-acre parcels, but they'd be willing to configure that any way we would need it if we were to reach terms, bigger, smaller, and then we would have the option to build whatever we would need so our building would suit us. Again, we have the same advantage of intergovernmental cooperation, which would be, we're serving our needs and we're also helping them out. At this location, we'd also be closer to 12 facilities, but further away from 11 than we currently are here. And the land would be readily available. It's vacant property that's not allocated for anything right now. The airport indicated that it takes roughly 6 months to arrive at terms, sign a lease, and give you the property to begin doing what you wish. Some of the disadvantages are that the school board already owns vacant property. So it's not a huge advantage to lease vacant property. Leasing a facility is one thing to consider, but if we're going to lease vacant property, it seems more suitable to just build on our own. Building the land on the board property would mean that it would be our building forever. Building on lease property would mean that in the future, if that lease were to fall apart or we decided to not renew it, then we just lost our investment on that building. Limited infrastructure available there. It's surrounded by the large parcels in front of the airport are surrounded by drainage ditches, but we would have to enhance those. There are water lines, sewer lines, and fiber in somewhat close proximity, but we would have to bring all of those into our parcel. So they are available, they're just not readily available. The potential cost of the lease is something that we would incur for perpetuity, so we decided to get out of it. So if we were to make the investment on the construction, we still have the rent payment. And then finally, again, this is property controlled by the FAA, so we fall into that same subordination clause. Even if we were to build our building, it becomes theirs at such time they see fit.
War or insurrection?
War or insurrection, as I like to say.
Whichever comes
first. I'll just introduce this one. We also met with the realtor, and we looked at a property that was listed for sale, and we did some investigations, and I'll turn it over to Pete to discuss what our findings were.
All right. This building's 2300 Third Court Bureau Beach, if you're not familiar with it, is it's right on the corner over by Miracle Mile. It's at the intersection of three major roadways, which is an advantage. You've got SR-60, Indian River Boulevard, and Royal Palm Boulevard. So that isn't a great location for a commercial building. It's kind of limited for the district's use because that actually puts us closer to one facility and further away from 22. It's not written there like it is on the other slides, but it is an evaluation package that I've received on Friday. Another advantage, if you will, is it's available. It's for sale. It's an existing building. It's a shell. It's already built, so there is an attraction there. Some of the disadvantages, and this is for us, we're a government agency, so what we do is a little bit different than, say, a doctor's office or, you know, any kind of mercantile occupancy. So I'm going to go through these bullets of the disadvantages, and then I'll explain the second bullet at the end if I make it reasonably clear. It's in a flood zone. You've seen the pictures of Osceola when it flooded. It's right down the road. That's just a plain fact of the area. In that second bullet, the potential cost to renovate the building for our needs, and I'll come back to that at the end. The cost to connect the fiber optic network, that is costly, like Scott mentioned in one of those earlier conferences. Have to bring everything in across town. It's not big enough. It's 22,400 square feet. Got a little under 2 acres of property. So we would still have to add square footage to that, and it could impact the parking, whether we need to expand that or buy some other place. We'd have to purchase the purchase price would have to be negotiated, so there's the process of doing that, getting appraisers involved, kind of thing. Going back to the potential cost of renovating the building for our needs, in the risk categories, building code, you have risk categories 1 through 4, 1 being the lowest, 4 being the highest. And basically what it says here in the highest categories, this is our shelters, our emergency management buildings, anything that has to work. It says buildings and other structures designated as essential facilities. That is your risk category 4. So those buildings have to be built to a higher standard. It's a critical needs operation, and that's what our administration building needs to be. That's what it'll be categorized. So the cost of renovating an existing building for how a government agency uses it is going to be a lot more than our anticipated needs. I'm not putting it very well, but it's better to build from scratch at that point than to change something that's already there, if that explains it. Yeah, this building was built in 1974. It does have some age on it. So,
and it's been vacant for a considerable amount of time.
Yes. Everything would have to be what we call divisions, the construction divisions. These are all your mechanical, electrical finishes. Everything would have to be brought to code. Everything.
So some of the other options we discussed a potential for constructing new, and if we were to do that on our own property, we have identified some locations. First location is the property in 66th Avenue that currently houses the Support Services Complex as well as Storm Grove Middle. There are approximately 146 acres that are undeveloped on that property, so it gives us plenty of room to develop whatever kind of site plan and building and infrastructure that we need there. Some of the advantages to that location would be that it becomes closer to 11 facilities, although it moves further away from 12. It again is, it's on board on property right now, so there would be no lease to be concerned with. The vacant land is currently available for construction, so if we were to decide to move forward, there'd be only the delays it took to get the building designed. The infrastructure is readily available. We have air conditioning is accommodated at the Storm Grove HVAC chiller plant. It was designed when Storm Grove was designed to accommodate expansion. The stormwater ponds are adequate to hold additional capacity. Most likely wouldn't have to expand them, but if we decided to go larger than we needed to for some reason, we could expand them. There's plenty of room. We have fiber optic at both locations there, so it would be just a matter of tying right on. The disadvantages that we have are the perceived distance from the center of the county. Obviously, this is more centrally located when you look at all the district facilities, but the perception of the public is you're a beach. So right now, the perception would be that we're in the center, although this would actually be closer to the actual center. Another site that's available is the lacrosse field, the lacrosse practice field, I should clarify, 20th Avenue. There's approximately 2.5 acres there, which would give us enough room to build a facility the size that we need with adequate parking. Some of the advantages that we have, and just to clarify, the lacrosse field is just south of the Vero Beach High School baseball field and just north of Vero Beach Elementary. On the aerial that you see there, you can see the new Vero Beach Elementary school right beside the old one that had not been torn down yet. The construction that you see just to the east of that site is what is now the pond, the retention pond. The advantages would be that its proximity to facilities is about the same. We don't really move. We're just about a mile down the road, so in relationship to the other facilities, we haven't changed much. The vacant land is available for construction right now. There would be no clearing that would be needed. And we make the decision to break ground, and it's available. It's board-owned property. Infrastructure is right there. The fiber optic network runs to the high school, past this property, to Vero Beach Elementary, so it's just a matter of tying into it. There are water lines, sewer lines, adequate drainage. We have the proposed high school chiller project and the ice storage plant under design right now. And if we were to decide to move forward with this project, we could enhance that project to accommodate the cost here, so we save those HVAC costs. And the pond that you see under construction there is adequate to hold whatever retention that we would need. There's some additional capacity there. Some of the disadvantages, we'd have to talk with the county about traffic. We'd have to do a traffic study and find out what their needs are. But most likely, what they would require would be somewhere in the frontage of the property, a culvert crossing over the 20th Avenue ditch. Southbound traffic would follow 20th Avenue down and make the U-turn at 12th and back up, and that's undesirable. So my guess is that the county would require some sort of road enhancements, and I think that's probably better than just a guess. The other disadvantages that we do is a practice field. It's a nice place. You can see, even in this picture, there are cars parked there, and that actually might be the construction workers here, but it looks very similar to that every evening. When school lets out, that's where the baseball players park, that's where the softball players park, that's where other groups park. So it's a well-used field, although it's not a regulation size. We just built the two fields at the Freshman Learning Center that are regulation that lacrosse will be using now, but it is still a nice facility that we'll be losing. The other option that we've looked at is the 25th Street property, which is right here is where we're sitting, and right here is the property outside the window. It's the vacant portion that was demolished by the county back in 2007. As you can see, there's some parking available here, and that would have to be modified, of course, but basically this line where the two parcels, if you will, even though it's not divided yet, are divided, gives us roughly 2.7 acres to develop right here. The advantages are obviously that the proximity to facilities is about the same. We're just moving right outside of where we are. The land is available for construction if we were to reach terms with the county, which they've shown some interest, but just haven't reached any agreements. And then the infrastructure is readily available. It'd just be a matter of tying everything in right next door. Some of the disadvantages are that we would have to reach terms with the county. Most likely they would require us to purchase the property. I don't know that, but we've had discussions with them on other things. We've given them a list of our properties, and they haven't shown any true interest in anything that we have for trade. So we would have to visit that, and I don't know what those negotiations would unfold. The cost of excavating and monitoring wells. What you see right there is the air conditioning equipment. Beneath that equipment is a fuel storage tank that when the county demolished their building, they would have been required to remove that, but because it was equipment that was servicing a building that wasn't going to be disturbed, the DEP gave them permission to abandon the tank. They pumped it dry, they filled it with grout, and they covered it with a slurry, so it's protected, encapsulated, and safe. But they did have to install monitoring wells, which one instance over the course of that time has uncovered some amber brown liquid that hasn't been identified. It only showed up once, but because of the discovery of an unidentified material, if you will, they continue to monitor the wells, and they put some irrigation limitations on us. And then the cost of mitigation for the potential contamination, which we haven't done any studies. To my knowledge, the county hasn't done any studies of the actual soil, but if we were to find the liquid again, we would have to decontaminate, or someone would.
Okay, board members have any questions on the sites we've presented? I have a couple. One of them is on this property adjacent to where we are. First of all, it's no secret that Mr. Baird has already said the day we move out, the very next day, this building is coming down. So they will have to deal with that contamination at that time, no matter what. So I don't see that if we were actually involved in that kind of a negotiation. That's not our cost, because that's something the county's going to have to bear no matter what. So that's definitely something we could discuss.
He would probably want to negotiate that.
Well, and he should. I would want you to negotiate things on our as much as you could. He's doing his job if he does that. The other thing is, if you look at the size of that property, which was the new part of the hospital, and that was torn down because it was a sick building, the new part was. But if you see that little one that is left there where Mr. McCain was born many years ago, that part was the original. We're in the original building. So we are in a sicker sick building than the sick building they tore down. So
no argument here.
And I do know that there are properties the county is interested in.
Yeah.
But we, right about over there somewhere, wasn't it?
I thought we were going to petition to get this on the National Register, get the story.
Anyway, they are interested in some of our properties, but not properties that we are willing to negotiate a sale with, because we need those for future, right. And they're not things that we can give away. So.
And you're right about that. I suppose I misspoke. The one property that they would be interested in, the board has decided that we're going to keep that at the advisement of the Land Acquisition Committee. So no available properties were they interested in.
Anything else?
I don't see it in here. What would be, or what we're going to get to it later maybe, what would be the potential cost of constructing it?
That's the next slide.
Well, I see the next slide is self-financing, but I didn't know if that was the bottom line or not. That's
about
available. The cash on hand, as it were.
Cash on hand. Next slide is that we've got roughly between item one and item two, roughly about $4.7 million. There's a memorandum in your packet that I have distributed regarding the 3.7, and we have kind of been coming to the board over time with unspent dollars left on various projects, and we've kind of cobbled that all together, if you will. So we do have that available. The board has authorized the sale of Old Osceola and for Pleasant Ridge, and we feel that for Osceola, we can get at least $1 million. It was appraised a little bit lower than that, and also Pleasant Ridge. So with
We have got some preliminary numbers from Mr. Chisella, but we would have to harden them up depending upon the board's direction or whatever way we want to go. But yes, you could build a 39,000 square foot building with not having to borrow a dime.
It's possible we could build a 39 square, a building just for the 6.3 that's shown.
Yes.
Based on current estimates.
I was going to say, based on the current estimate of cost of construction.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, price of gas goes up, and delivery costs go up.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, square footage cost goes up. Okay.
So just to point out that the $1,450,000 is not in hand because of you'll be waiting for the sale to take place.
When is that supposed to take?
In October. I don't think we have got a solid date yet.
We have not finalized the date. I actually have a call into Carlin Daniels to see if Auction Associates to see if we can get together and pick a good date.
And I know the board had taken action on we would not sell for less than the appraised value, because that was the recommendation of the of the committee coming forward. So the Osceola recommendation was the Osceola appraisal was $700,000, and the Pleasant Ridge was
$350,000. I think it was
$350,000.
For Pleasant Ridge.
For Pleasant Ridge. Right. And seven for.
And seven for Osceola. Okay. Just a reminder.
Ms. Sarah, Madam Chair, just one point on the 39,000 square foot.
The in the discussions that we've had with DOE, they have some flexibility in the availability of ancillary space. There's a formula that limits us, but there are also, as I mentioned, one of the areas with staff development. We haven't utilized all that we should have. We have available maintenance space. Part of our ancillary space requirement is being taken up by what is now housing maintenance. So we're not even using that available space the right way. So the DOE has a lot of flexibility in allowing different ways to construct space. So that $39,575 is a number that we came up with without doing any hard investigations, and it's a number that they're, again, not committed to, but very confident they can work with. And that number can slide up and down as we assess needs.
Well, that wasn't, and I'm speaking on behalf of the direction from the board, that was not our direction for you to take this any further than providing us with what Ms. Jimenez, when she brought it up, and the board member and the rest of the board agreed to, which is to look at, I believe there were three things. One was the available properties, the other was properties we already own, and the third thing was the needs assessment for the square footage we need at this time. I believe those were the three things you were directed to do. So
we were just trying to anticipate in terms of size and cost.
So I don't expect any more information than what obviously we're receiving. Mm-hmm. I don't know what other board members, but I don't want you to be spending a tremendous amount of your time and effort and energy on something if you know you went to where you went to the three charges that you were given, and I appreciate that.
Yes, ma'am.
Discussion.
General.
Next one is dialogue with the school board.
Over the summer, when you had the superintendent summit, I saw the potential for Storm Grove in a new light, and the idea of having administrative complex near that school where you have potential space for a meeting with staff on a larger basis, because we currently have no place where you could meet with all your staff at one time, you know, if you wanted to bring large groups together. So I like that idea that we would be near Storm Grove and that an existing property is used for some of these large group meetings without having to build additional space for that. I think that would be a really nice adjacency to have. I also think that because we have owned land, that we should not be spending any money on any land. The land around Storm Grove is basically inventory that we do not have use for a very, very long time for schools. So to spend any money on property, I think, would be a shame. I think that we should be using property that we already own. But I'm not inclined to use the cross fields because they are already they don't have a designated use, but they have, they are being used, and they are kind of part of that community, the fabric of a community where that, that space is used by local people. So I'm more inclined to go to of the owned properties to storm the storm room.
Mr. McCain, you want to talk about soccer fields?
To me, it's pretty obvious. This is just, there's two choices, and two choices only. It's spend your $4 to $4.5 million to renovate this building, or spend $6 million to go to storm room property. Those are the only two real choices there are, as far as I can see. And if it were, and I said something, very loud, Carter, we discussed it afterwards. I'm not a real big fan of building an administrative building, and certainly if it was $4.3 million versus $20 million, I'd come. If we can get some better, harder numbers on this, then it doesn't make it, whether you're dealing with a warehouse or any kind of building, any kind of physical plant, it doesn't make sense to spend the materially same amount of money to renovate versus build new. You'd always build new if you're that close to the price. But that's just the thing. That's why I asked the question earlier. I didn't know if this was cash on hand. Plus, we need to borrow 13 to get us to the point. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm waiting for. Because I never saw something that said it would cost approximately this much to build. Obviously this building would be a little.
I appreciate staff's work and follow up, but I do think Mr. McCain had the point. Some of these are just not options, period. If we are going to do something, it should be on our property. And I think, I stand in the same place. When I came on the board, we were having this conversation about this facility, and it's very difficult to justify building. Without having, obviously we don't have the numbers. I think I'm convinced that we need something because this space is just not a convenient space. It's not a healthy building. It's really not what we need. And I spoke today with Dr. Adams, and I think one of the things that I wanted to hear was that there was really no option in terms of thinking outside of the box and looking at our existing other buildings that the district owns. And what I'm hearing is that there's really no space anywhere else. There are no wings we could hobble together and avoid any expense. I wouldn't want to invest $4 million on this unhealthy building. I just don't think it's a smart thing to do. But I hesitate. I really have a hard time just getting around this idea of building something, of building yet another administrative type complex, because our economy still is a bad place. There are so many needs for students, so many needs in terms of programs, support services for kids. I know that other school districts, I think it was one of them was Collier County, who actually had a resolution to use capital dollars for educational, non-capital purposes, and they were granted that resolution. And so I have a really hard time. I'm torn. I know we need the facility, but the priority are the kids. And I know this is not a healthy building. I've seen the traps, the rodent traps in my office. I have to come in here and be cold, and I know it's because we have mold problems or whatever. So I know that this is not a good place, and I see how our staff have to deal with it. But I would need better numbers, and I wouldn't want to have to go out and ask the taxpayers for any more dollars than what we have. And I am curious. We have a roll forward of unspent budget from 2012-2013 of about $1 million. How does that happen that we have those additional dollars?
Those are from projects that were either, for example, we had $100,000 just off the top of my head, I'm remembering, for land purchases in the budget. We never purchased any land. We have dollars left over. In fact, there's an agenda item tonight on Osceola.
for the kitchen. There's dollars left over on that. So as time has gone on, we've had various projects. We've taken advantage of the low cost of construction and our hard bid on a lot of our projects. So we have a lot of dollars left over that we kind of put our pennies together.
The capital projects fund also represents dollars that have rolled over in the past. I'm just trying to understand, you know, how we have, you know, that $4.7 million.
Right. The million dollars has to be with those projects that were left over.
Just from that.
Yes. From that fiscal year, yes.
And then number one.
And the $3.7 million, as I discussed in my memorandum, was due to, as you're aware, each year we transfer about $3.3 million or so from the capital fund over into the general fund to assist with maintenance costs. And we were able to delay that this year in 12-13.
So you were able to delay it?
Or not do it.
But would you need those funds in the future?
We're in a different fiscal year that we have allocated the same amount in the general fund, in the transfer this year, as part of your budget for this year.
So when we don't use funds, we don't revisit our budget and reduce it. We just keep funds as placeholders from one year to the next.
Can I add, this is the first time we've not transferred that dollars to general fund, okay? And he purposefully delayed it, knowing that we were going to look at this, and hopefully we don't need it. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel like we're in a good financial position this year. But you would have it again in the future if you needed it. You're not holding up dollars year after year with this. This is a
one-time.
Yeah.
One time.
But the 3.7, we have $4.3 million we need to spend on this building to renovate it.
Right.
Correct.
So that, to me, we're in the hole. So thank goodness you have been prudent and not transferred that to general fund, because whether it's 3.7 or we're going to go with this with renovations, either way, it is not money that, it's money we're going to have to spend on this building.
Yes.
In one way or the other. And when I originally got this, I would say I got a little bit excited about the soccer fields. And then I thought that, and that really was my, when I sat and ranked them, and I didn't get past three because I didn't think the others were really worth considering. But you were supposed to look at size and availability of existing buildings that we had. 66th Avenue property, we have that. We're so far away from what the original long-range plan was for that property. You know, we were looking at not just the middle school, but an elementary, a middle school. The timeline was a middle school, and then we're going to do an elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forget, we had one
support services.
And was transportation out there one time?
There was discussion of putting
transportation. That's how the original. But that's the good thing about a long-range plan is that when you get to the reality of the day, you can make those changes. I think that it would be irresponsible for me. I'm only talking about Carol Johnson, board member. It would be irresponsible for me to commit a huge amount of money in doing this building over, or the yearly costs of this building that continue year after year after year. If you look back at what Mr. Morrison did for us quite some time ago as to what our costs have been every single year on this building, they are not getting less. They're continuing to get more. I think it would be irresponsible for me not to say I'm willing to commit to capital to build a new building instead of continuing, even with these repairs, even with these 4.3, you can't tell me you're not going to have monumental repairs even after that. So to commit to capital as opposed to capital operating is, I'm a long way from the mindset of Mr. Morrison and Mr. McCain, but even in my mind, that makes much better sense for the taxpayer, not even talking about our employees in this building or what we all have to deal with here. But that, to me, is more being more accountable to the taxpayer, rather than throwing away money on operating, because that's what operating is. Every time I fill up my car with gas, it doesn't stay. It goes away. So I think that a commitment to capital makes much more financial sense. It's being more prudent with our finances.
Anything else we have?
I would like to say we've had our own rich debate about locations and you know where we think that it ought to go, and if we, you know, if we're able to do this. And you know, one of the things that we talked about is this is a 50-year decision. You know, this is something that it really is long range. You know, so wherever it, you know, if we're able to do this, and I hope we are, because I will tell you that the employees in this building are very important to all of us in our organization, and this is not a good building to be in anymore, straight up. You know, it just really isn't for our employees. And I think that the fact that we're able to, I think we'd feel differently about it if we had to borrow money, but the fact that we may be able to do something and not have to borrow the dollars is important to us as well. So I'd just like to know from the board what you would like us to do next.
Yeah, I guess my ongoing concern is because we don't have hard numbers, we are excited that we wouldn't have to borrow, but we don't know that for a fact. And so that's, to me, that's the ongoing concern, because we have this money set aside, but we don't know that, you know, this is going to foot the bill. But having said that, you know, I think if we could get better numbers moving forward, that would definitely, and again, as Ms. Johnson summarized, you know, we didn't ask staff to give us a budget. We asked staff to look at what was available and make recommendations, and they have done that. In terms of having to build the facility, I would recommend it would be in the Storm Grove, near Storm Grove. Also, but I, you know, again, the expense is obviously a concern, because we are being responsible to the taxpayers,
absolutely,
in terms of investing in capital and not just putting it into a, you know, a bottomless pit. But on the other hand, what is the actual cost?
Ms. Dizzy.
Well, I think Dr. Adams really framed it for us when she said it's a 50-year investment. So we are going to spend $4.3 million one way or another. So really we're being asked, do we want to spend an additional $2 million and create a building that will last another 50 years? Or do we want to spend $4.3 million on this building and really just wire and duct tape it together? Because that is just to bring it up to basic necessities. That is an aesthetics, that is efficiency with energy, you know, that isn't security, that isn't increasing our capacity of IT. You know, there's a lot of things that we need beyond the basic 4.3 just to keep this building together.
And we're still leasing the land.
That's correct. So if we spend the additional $2 million, we now have an asset mm-hmm. on our books that is fully paid for. When we put $4.3 million in this building, there is no asset. This is just us putting money into a building that doesn't belong to us. So, thank you.
What about the?
I mean, if I got it right, I'll be quiet.
But you didn't mention which property you were.
Oh, so I would put it on the Storm Grove property. Yes.
Mr. McCain.
Sorry.
So I think as we see, if we're willing to take next step, is we need to have an architect give us some prices, and we'd like to bring something forward to you.
And that would be a workshop. That would be a workshop, because then there would be direction given at that workshop, or not given.
Yeah.
But, well, you have to have direction. You need to fix this building, or we need to look at building a new building.
We don't do support services. Which architect would be support services?
I don't know.
We also... no, sorry, I'll save it.
So what I hear you saying is go ahead and get some hard figures for Storm Grove and set a workshop to bring that information back.
And we will have we will include what the county's going to require us to do for Storm Grove.
Okay.
As far as you know, ingress. I mean, the decel lanes, all of that.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. Keep it efficient.
Well, yes, and do keep it simple. We do not need barrel tile.
this would not include that.
Yes. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I recall when we went to visit the support services complex, there's a lot of space there. There was a lot of wasted space. And I think when we went to visit one of our other schools, too, that just was really huge. And I think we have to be mindful of that,
sure.
Because that is not what this is about. This is about making sure that we have adequate space for staff. And that's the goal for IT, for all these other things. And, you know, those two buildings, you know, we had to go back to, I know I had to go back to the community people that brought it up and say, you know, we needed the buildings. Maybe we did overdo it on the space, and I would hate to do that again.
One other thing, and I'm certain that this group will, I mean, we are not looking at the same people that were involved in those, so we need to move forward. But I do know that when, at least when it came to support services, the department heads were asked about certain things that they needed or didn't need, and there are things that absolutely were personality specific, and I would hope that planning would not include personality specific going forward.
You don't have to worry about this
group.
I don't think I do.
But,
and that time has changed. I mean,
it has. Big time.
No, we're not going to have mahogany reels going up to the stage. Okay. You have direction?
I do have direction, and I appreciate it very much, and we will move forward with due speed.
And I would appreciate if you would do that. And the reason is that, you know, as we get further into the end of the year, the calendar year, mm-hmm. I think that things always slow down. And those, so if we could, if you could move forward, that would be great. And again, I'd like to thank Ms. Disney and Ms. Jimenez during our capital for talking about those things, because we've all had a bit of creative avoidance.
We have something else to bring to the board.
Oh, you have something else to bring to
yes,
the board?
Yes, we had added it to the agenda. And I think one of the things that you can expect from... from the executive team and the directors now is you're going to get new thinking. And this is one of the outcomes of new thinking. And... I'm really glad to give Mr. Morrison and Mr. Ehrman this opportunity to talk about reorganization of the physical plant department. So if you'll... we'll start with Mr. Morrison.
Thank you very much, Dr. Adams. As you mentioned... we have new leadership in the area of our physical plant, formerly maintenance department, as well as the facilities area. And as you will recall, at the state of the district, we did inform the board that we were looking at things differently and that we would we're looking at the operations and what's best for the district and the students that we serve in terms of our physical plant. Today is a culmination of probably half and half, I would say, 6 months of, or close to a year of observation and just rich debate and cussing and discussing and making sure that we bring forward our best thinking to the board. So based on that, we have actually created a mini mission statement, if you will, of the physical plant department. It is customer service and economic efficiency in close support of our students and our educators. Student first. And you will see that theme as we go through the presentation today. I will turn it over to Mr. Ehrman to discuss the plans in a moment. So, John, go ahead and take it away for the next slide.
I just want to give you a real quick history. I have actually worked for the Indian River County School District for 11 years. Your checks came to me. I did thermal energy storage plants in almost every one of our thermal energy storage sites. Renovated, tore out ceilings, new furniture, floors, the whole nine yards. And in doing such, I became very intimate with the staff at the school district and also got to know the operations of the maintenance department. And one of my, goals of taking on this job, this chair that I'm in now, was that I wanted to change it. I wanted to see it done differently. They had great resources that I thought were being underutilized, and it just didn't sit well with me the way that it was going. So I took a year, and I watched, and I learned, and I saw, and I refined my recipe for what I wanted to get to. And that's kind of what this is about. This is a refocusing of the mentality of the people. They have not been turned or twisted in 40 years. And they're very entrenched. And it's time for them to become the Sears serviceman. It's time for them to look at you and say, how did I do? You know, it's going to take some movement. You're not going to do that by talking to them. They're going to have to realize that this is how the world is today, is that you have to be good with your customers. And every one of the students, every one of the teachers, every one of the administrators are our customers. And we're there to do everything we can. My management philosophy with this department is that we start as close as possible to the student and we work our way out. So we're going to do everything we can right there in that classroom. And then we'll do things out in the hallway. And then we'll do things out in the walls, the roof, and then out in the yard. But everything's focused on the student. Part of that is that we're going to create a three-tiered service system. What that means is that there's a level one, two, and three. Level one being the person that's closest to the student, teacher, administrator. Level two being the people that then are dispatched from a central plant, the support service complex. And those are the technicians. Those are electricians, the HVAC mechanics, the plumbers, that the level one service person wasn't able to solve the problem, so he calls help. This is where the help comes from. And then if the level two service people can't handle it, then we bring in the level three, which are the factory trained technicians that we pay on an as-needed basis.
In your packet, you should have 8.5 by 14 paper, two sheets of paper. There you go. And at the top left-hand side is the current organizational chart for the physical plant department. And then the second page is the reorganized focus of the physical plant department. On the front page, I've just put some red colored over the boxes that are subject to the reorganization. And what's not evident here is that all these HRSA support personnel are stationed at the central plant. When you go to the second page, you will now see, or it may not be as evident, but in the bottom two boxes you will see that they are now reassigned to the as plant operators in the schools. We will have a plant supervisor for technical people and a plant supervisor for general, and John will get into the more specifics about that. Included in this proposal is the person who is the plant supervisor for general will assist the principals in the supervision of custodial. We have a very serious custodial problem in our schools, and we are trying to get better management and efficient and training, as John will get into in a moment. So the next slide, John.
As I alluded to, the level one service is now the plant operators and supervisors. They are located at the schools. There's 14 of them, and they're assigned at various schools. Some of the elementary schools share a plant operator because there's just not enough scale to make it pay, so to speak, but there is a plant operator at every school. What that does is that, suppose Mrs. Smith's second grade classroom toilet clogs up. Mrs. Smith calls the secretary at the front of the office and says, my toilet's clogged up. She picks up the radio and says, Joe, go fix the toilet. Joe then enters a work order on our new work order system, goes and tries to fix the toilet. If he successfully comes back, enters in that it was repaired and it took him 30 minutes. That generates a record of that toilet being clogged up. That's the level one service. Now, if whenever he goes out, he's unsuccessful at cleaning that toilet, he calls, sends in a work order to the central plant and says, help. A plumber comes out with a snake, snakes the toilet. If he's successful, that closes out the work order, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see that it, what it is it's also it's very proactive maintenance. In other words, it's less of knee-jerking and more of we're there and we're here, we're right with you, and we're supporting you. The plant operators, Martin County has a very similar system to this. And the plant operators, one of the keys to this is that they take ownership. It's their school. And they know every nook and cranny. They know where every breaker is. They know where everything about that school. And when something happens, they're standing right there saying, the valve's right here type thing. We don't have that right now. And the plant operators, this is critical, take the burden off of the administrator. They take the operation of the physical plant off of the principal, for example, who then now has more time to focus on the students. So if you'll see a theme here where everything keeps coming back to how we support. The level two personnel are pretty much the same folks we have now. They are the electricians, the HVAC technicians. They're the more skilled labor type folks. And they're based out of the central plant. They drive their car to the central plant, and they get in a work truck, and they go on the road. The plant operators drive their car to the school, and that's where they stay. So they don't come to the central plant anymore. We will bring them back for training. We're going to have a lot of training and a lot of... These are basically handymen, the level one operators. Level three, like I said, was the outsourced. That's the train or the walk-in cooler mechanics, those type of people. The potential benefits of this reorganization are really quite interesting. And I actually, they kept making me shorten the list up. So it wouldn't fit on a page. Probably the key, most important thing is that school leadership has more time to focus on education instead of clogged up toilet. That, to me, is the most important thing that we can do. Also, there's a centralized supervision and efficient management of resources. In other words, with these supervisors, the general supervisor, he goes, he's also the what I call the aesthetic supervisor. He looks at the schools for aesthetics. What's the school look like? Does it need to have paint on the front door? Does the sidewalk need to be pressure washed? Does the curb need to be painted? Do the weeds need to be pulled? Is the landscape contractor doing his job? Those kind of things. And then the technical guy keeps the building operating, keeps the lights on and the plumbing working and all that stuff. There's faster response time by the plant operators. They're right there. You don't have to put in a work order and then tomorrow the guy gets the work order and then maybe the next day he gets to that clogged up toilet that now smells foul. There's district-wide uniformity in what we do to all the schools because we have one person going to every school instructing the plant operators on what it's supposed to look like and how it's supposed to operate. So we have uniformity. We'll have improved training and education towards certification and things like that. This includes the custodians. Just the other day, we had some custodians mix some ammonia with some toilet bowl cleaner and caused a bomb at Gifford, and they had to evacuate the building. They just didn't know that you can't mix things together to make a super cleaner. So there's a lot of training that needs to go on, centrally located at the central plant in our break room that's already set up for that type of training. We're going to try to sensitize everyone to more green things, and we'll get to that in just a minute, but there's also a lot of green chemicals that they should be using. Right now we have a lot of schools that are purchasing chemicals on their own. They're all going out and getting different things. And I go into a school and I go, you're not supposed to have that. Why? Because we're not supposed to have it. But it's all a matter of training. There's a potential to reduce risk management issues. Having people mixing chemicals is one way. Another big thing is that it reduces our rolling stock of inventory. In other words, we don't have these trucks running up and down the road burning gas, burning rubber off the wheels and causing capital expenditures and everything else. We're setting up a plan right now. We started just into it with electricity, with energy savings. where we're going to come out here in the next month or so, as soon as FPNL gives me total numbers on energy savings, and we're going to give schools an incentive for that. They get 10% of the savings that they saved over the summer. So there's all kinds of little programs like that that are going to be coming at these teachers and these administrators that are going to be able to say, wow, this is different. And then there's the potential savings. We're talking about a $300,000 first year saving and about a $100,000 general fund saving per year and increased service. That's the double win. So it works both ways. And the intangibles are is that we'll have people at these schools that are also additional security observers. They're not going to be law enforcement, but there's someone there, one presence in the schools, working all over the place.
Just to clarify, the $300,000 is the culmination of all the things that we will give you on the summary slide, but this from the reorganization, and one thing we forgot to sort of mention is that we would obviously have to sit down with the union to notify them appropriately and work through this issue. However, in year one, as you can see, we have a one-time disposition of several vehicles of about $126,000 that we think that we can bring in. Obviously, we will have less fuel and repair savings on that. There are some differentials that we are trying to establish pay grades for elementary, middle, and high school plant operators by CWA contract. We will provide some training. As you see, we have deducted costs each year for ongoing training for these plant operators. And cost of uniforms, we feel that, you know, even just the appearance of the current uniforms, we want to have people have pride in themselves and what they do. To approve the appearance, we were planning on getting some uniforms. So in year one, the bulk of that savings obviously is coming from a one-time disposition of a lot of the vehicles that are right now in the maintenance area that will no longer be required due to the reorganization. They will be at the schools. And in year two through year five, we have roughly about a $38,000 savings going forward.
Okay, there's some other interrelated, interconnected initiatives going on here. I very rarely do I look at a situation, especially in building computer systems, very rarely is what I call a Perry Mason moment. It's usually 10 different things working at one time that create a situation. Well, in this, there's three things going on. And the first one is that we're going to do something different to improve the aesthetics of our school-based common areas. And this is primarily the middle and high schools. We're going to realize cost savings while incorporating green technology into our plant operations. And the third thing is that we're going to increase the district energy cost comparisons for energy efficient. And Mr. Morrison's going to show you that in just a second. And we're going to upgrade the HVAC building automation systems to the latest and greatest technology. The first initiative is to improve the aesthetics of the school-based common areas through contracted services. Currently, we contract out the common area lawn maintenance of all of our elementary schools. And we're looking to expand that program to our middle and high schools. We find it not cost-effective for our people to try to compete against contracted services in this area. We have too many benefits. The district currently outsources, like I said, all that. Shows a savings of about $39,000 a year by outsourcing this versus doing it internally. Includes a one-time distribution, and of course we have to talk to the CWA. I want you to keep in mind here that there are no job losses. The head count remains the same. We're just moving people around, changing their descriptions, changing their purpose, what they do every day, to more efficient, better ways.
So this is the financial analysis, or a summary of the financial analysis that we have done. Based on through contracted services, we feel that we can save at least $39,000 a year. We will, again, have a one-time equipment sale based on the fact that we no longer need them. So in year one, we have about $182,000 savings, and thereafter about close to $39,000 in savings.
The second initiative is the green technology, and we've done quite a bit of work on this. As a matter of fact, y'all approved the garbage truck on September 11th. It's on order. It should be here the 1st of October. That's going to run on compressed natural gas, and that's going to save us a lot of money over our existing equipment. And so you can see there that the total savings for the garbage truck the first year about $20,000, and then $13,000 thereafter annual savings versus our existing operation with a diesel-powered truck.
In your packet, you should have a report that is from the Florida Department of Education, and it shows on there, can I borrow this for a second? It shows on there an energy cost efficiency comparison for all school districts in the state of Florida. It looks like this. And we extracted some information from the report that I would like to share with you regarding the next couple of slides. It should be in your packet, I hope.
I don't see that report. The information is extracted from
it. It's behind the orange page.
Okay.
Thank you.
Actually, my packet didn't include any of this stuff. My packet went from...
Yeah, we're all finding our stuff.
So when we looked at the report, and this was some serious cause for concern for us, we looked at ourselves and said, how are we doing with counties that are in our geographical region? Basically two up, two down the coast, Martin and St. Lucie to the south, and Brevard and Volusia to the north. And when you look at the report for energy, all energy per square foot, which includes natural gas, LP, etc., and they divide it by the total number of square foot, which we have in the district, for Indian River, our cost was $1.59 per square foot, and for electricity only was $1.57. When you look at us by geographical region, you can see that we are the highest in terms of our electricity and energy costs per square foot. When you look at the statewide average of $1.21 versus $1.59, and for electricity, we're at $1.57 versus the statewide average of $1.18. What I also did was to look at the deviation from the state average. So right now, we are 38 cents above the state average of $1.21 for all energy. And for electricity, we are 39 cents above the state average for electricity only. When you look at the cost per capital outlay FTE, you will see that our cost per FTE is $313.49, whereas we are the highest in terms of geographical region where we are. For electricity only, we are at $308.83, and we are the highest in terms of geographical region and higher than the state average. So when you look at cost per FTE, for all energy, we're $91.41 above the state average, and for electricity, we are $92.95 above the state average, while everyone else in our geographical region is lower. Then we also looked at by similar size county. Those are the counties that have a similar size student population to ours. And when we looked at it, again, we are $1.59, but when you look at Charlotte, Citrus, and Martin County, we are higher than all of those like-sized counties. For energy, all energy, which includes natural gas, LP, etc., and also for electricity. In the category of cost per capital outlay FTE, we are also the highest at $313.49. for all energy and $308.83 for electricity only. When you look at the deviation from the state average, we are highest and above the state average by 38 cents for all energy and 39 cents for electricity only. And while our peers, similar size, are under the state average by these various amounts. When you look at capital outlay per FTE, cost is $91.41 above the state average, where electricity only were $92.95 above the state average. So, John, I'm going to turn it over to John, and he's going to discuss at least the first step that we're going to make in terms of trying to improve our energy efficiency ratings.
So let me summarize what you just saw in those tables. What the takeaway was is that the board, in their wisdom, has been very willing to spend money on energy projects. And they've invested a lot of money in thermal energy storage and energy-saving projects, the infrastructure. The result of that is that we're in the top 10% of spending, and we're next to last in efficiency. The problem is not that we don't have the pumps and the pipes and the chillers. The problem is that we don't have the brains. We don't have the controls. It's the machines that control the machines. We've been sole sourced with our controls vendor since 1998. And I swear I've seen some of the original equipment. It's not a good situation. The company that we use is called Roth Brothers. They're a vendor. The material that they use is called Andover Continuum. Andover Continuum has been bought several times. And in the last couple of years, there's been zero spent on R&D. When you're in the technology industry and you don't spend anything on R&D, your days are numbered. Mm-hmm. Clock's running backwards. As my wife reminds me, I spend more time on HVAC than I do anything else in this district. I'm at Sebastian River High School at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm at Vero Beach High School at 9 o'clock at night. I'm all over the place late at night. And I've seen what the problems are. I know what the problems are, and we have to fix them. We can make a rapid ascent up the efficiency schedule because we have all the infrastructure. They call it parts and smarts. Is all we need. And what this does, what I'm saying is that we would like to replace our current HVAC control vendor and replace them in the short period. We have another vendor that can come in and start fixing things. We got another person that we want to bring in that has an indoor air quality energy manager, which is the same thing that our neighboring counties have. In doing so, we can work underneath our budget, our current budget for HVAC controls. We can keep the cost. There will be no added cost for doing these things. We'll then put out an RFP for controls vendors and go through that process and get a permanent year-to-year type vendor to work with us to update to the latest and greatest control systems. We know we can do better. There's no reason why we can't. We just need to get out from underneath the controls that we are right now. And this is a way out.
Isn't that, if we bring ourselves within statewide average, isn't that worth like $1.5 million? And I see $100 for
FT.
COFT, yeah.
Right now in Indian River, in our district, we have three schools that are below state average. All the rest are above. So I'm a little overwhelmed. And this is the way we can help. Now what we're doing is we're showing a small amount of savings there. That's just kind of a contingency or a miscellaneous category. But we want to go at this thing with a new vendor and new materials. And the vendor we have right now uses a narrow banded system that is not open on the web. It's almost like DOS. So we really have to go at this. And this is a big priority for me because I've fought with this for 11 years. We put a $2 million thermal energy storage plant in there and then it wouldn't work. And we would fight with the controls vendor. So we need to change the playing field.
Mr. Morris.
Thank you. The contract that we have with the vendor, we purposely did not renew it at the expiration of the contract because we knew that we had to formulate a plan to address the situation. So we worked with Ms. DiAgresta, and she reviewed the contract, and all we have to do is just give them 30 days' notice, and then we would bring in the replacement vendor after. We're going to bring in a vendor to do the repairs, and then we would go through an RFP process for proper controls and monitoring. So from a legal perspective, we have been working with Ms. DiAgresta to ensure that we can part ways without having to put ourselves at any sort of risk.
We've had them since 1998?
Yes, ma'am.
I thought it was earlier than that. I thought it was when Sebastian High School was built.
This is far back. I saw it in the board agenda from 1998. That may have been a renewal.
So the final slide sort of tries to put together the potential savings from the reorganization, as well as other initiatives that we have discussed with the board, from expansion of common area maintenance to the update on the garbage truck, and now the more serious one that we'll be focusing our energy, no pun intended, is to replace our HVAC controls vendor to get better efficiency and better monitoring and try to move up in the rankings on that statewide report.
Can we go back to the replacement of HVAC controls in this slide? Can you explain those numbers?
Yes.
Your current cost is $207,472. To replace it with a different vendor is $125,000.
The $207,000, I'll let John speak to the $125,000. The $207,000 is the contracted amount that we have to pay the vendor every year. So every month we cut them a check, and annually we spend $200,000. The estimated
For years,
several years. The estimated replacement cost has to do with parts. It's a round number. Parts and also, I believe, the energy IAQ guy that we had input into the assumptions.
Right. If you look, what you're seeing there is $125,000 budgetary number for repairs. It's a dynamic
estimate.
If we had a school get struck lightning and took the entire control system out, then we may spend $10,000 fixing that school, but then it may not happen again for a little while. At the same time, we're going to be upgrading. We have a lot of things going on that shouldn't be going on, so we're going to have technicians in the field calling back to somebody who's on the computer saying it's on, it's off, and they're going to verify. It's called documentation verification. So we're going to be doing a lot of that. There's also included in there is the IAQ energy person manager who's going to work with this $125,000 a month vendor. And this $125,000 a month vendor is just a patch until we do the RFP a year type thing. So that's just a patch until we get the permanent approved vendor in to work with us year in, year out to migrate us to the modern technology. That's not going to get us there very quickly. I had a quote to replace our controls 100% with the upgrade latest and greatest is $6 million. So we're going to be pecking.
That's lights and windows.
No, that's just HVAC controls. So we're going to be pecking away at it. We're going to be using our existing equipment and trying to make it work better. That type of thing.
And so where are your estimated savings coming from?
It's the difference between those two numbers
and the 70.
The math doesn't work.
There's a 70.
Something.
No, that's why I say the 70.
I'm just letting you explain it.
Something happened.
70.
There. The 70. Came
right.
Off. Yeah.
The 70,000 for the energy coordinate manager is out of that.
All right. It's a 70,000.
I haven't done math in a while.
Sorry. Yeah, when you're up at 2 o'clock at night, everything works.
Okay. Is that RFQ that you have to do, is that subject to that financing through energy savings?
No, that is the performance contracting that you're referring to.
Okay.
That's not
this.
Right. No.
It's too bad. I mean, it's perfect.
Well, there'll be... The strategy, if you want to look at all of that, is that performance contracting, theoretically upon approval and approval and approval, will be taking whole sites like Vero Beach High School out and putting a whole new control system in it.
Yes.
So they'll be chipping away. They'll be taking schools off of that. So that 207, if that's our magical number, will be decreasing as BC grows, our existing declines.
Okay.
You see what I mean? So it's kind of a declining balance sort of thing. It's complicated, but it's hard.
Yep.
Thank you.
I just really want to commend you. I think your opening statements about what you've observed and the need to refocus and entrench mentalities is really not something that your department needs to do. I think it's something that the entire district is doing piecemeal. So I really thank you for that, because I really think that's the way we affect change in our district. You have people that have the passion and have a vested interest in making it better without somebody having to be telling them. You know, that's where thinking outside the box comes. And I think that's where our district is at its best. So I thank you, because this is the kind of work we need from each of us, from all our employees. So thank you very much.
I appreciated that you brought up aesthetics a couple of times in your presentation. Because we don't have consistency throughout the district in how each campus looks. Did you say that one of the protest people that's going to be overseeing the aesthetics of the school?
Yes, that's correct. Did you know that? Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes in the community, a school is perceived as a good school or not a good school based on its curb appeal.
Yeah.
So I think that's very smart to sort of not necessarily standardize, have them all to the same level of being human.
The expectation is the same, but the presentation can be different. This has been really good.
I think so too. And I just want I just want to appreciate the staff again, because they are bringing a new way of thinking. They're not afraid to step forward and say, you know, this isn't working right. We're wasting dollars here, and we've got to do it differently, and coming up with a plan. So thank you all very much.
Good people in our class. Nothing else to come before us?
No.
And I believe you have your direction for next steps.
I do.
As far as what we're, and
I
we
do.
Have, we have expectations as far as what we're going to be doing with the contract and the RFP that will be coming forward to us. Okay. All right. Nothing else before us until 3:00, and we will be in here to begin our meeting, and then we will recess for executive session.
Do we have to wait till 3?
Yes.
Yes. Advertised. Meeting adjourned.